All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Samach Hamad Bet, 17 lines up. Gemara asks, Heichan Edim Chotmim. Here we're speaking about a get mikushar. The Mishnah already indicated to us that there are two types of shterot that you can have. You're going to get pashut, and then you can have a get mikushar. The Mishnah delineates certain differences between a get pashut and a get mikushar. One of those is the way that the Edim sign. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. When it comes to get mikushar, how do the Edim sign on the get mikushar? Ravun Amar ben Kesher the Kesher. He signs between the different ksharim, the different knottings, tyings, foldings of the shtar mikushar. This will depend on what you think a shtar mikushar is. That's not as straightforward as you would think that everybody knows what a shtar mikushar is. And that's because, as you note in the top Tosafot, on the top right here, Tosafot already notes that it fell out of practice, and that they were not using shtarot mikusharim in his time, and he has a problem. He says that if the whole institution was for Kohanim, and it was an obligation to have a shtar mikushar because of the Kohanim and slowing them down in terms of divorce, how do we have the Kohanim in our day not have a shtar mikushar? If that's a requirement, how are we not doing that? From Tosafot's question, it's clear that they're not writing shtarot mikusharim, which is an important fact that the Rishonim themselves are not familiar with these shtarot because they're not being used anymore. They're not in circulation. And that means whatever they are discussing or speaking about, in some ways is through misora or through speculation about what a shtar mikushar looked like based on what we saw in the Mishnah, based on what we know from the Gemara. And so for that reason, you end up with numerous opinions as to what a shtar mikushar is, and not just simply taking whatever was being written or evidence of what they have and say, oh, that's a shtar mikushar. So the two main opinions that you have in terms of shtar mikushar, which are noted by the Mishnah, is the position of the Rishbam, the Balei Tosafot, Rashi, all of those in that category who believe that they used to write the shtar and then fold it over. They wrote two lines, left two lines blank. And then they'd fold over the written part onto the blank part. And then they would, again, write two more lines, and then have two blank lines, and then fold it over. And then they would stitch it so at each time, those folds. But they did it in such a manner that it looks like a fan of some sort, which is that each fold set independently, and then you'd have the next fold, because otherwise they wouldn't fold on each other. And that's how you had this get mikushar. Therefore, for them, the definition of kesher or mikushar means the fold itself. The fold itself was stitched, but the main idea of the mikushar or kesher is that they are folded upon each other. The Balei Tosafot discussed in yesterday's daf, how is it that when you have a get mikushar, and according to Kori of Chanina ben Gamliel in the Mishnah, who says that you can make a get mikushar into a get pashut, which is simply have the edim sign on the inside, open it up, how is that possible if you have gapping? Because if you opened it up, there'd be blank lines in between. So the Balei Tosafot discuss that. They give different answers, some of which are that people aren't perfect at their writing anyway. Even a get pashut wasn't written with such straight lines, and it was written in a manner that left gapping, because the sofrim are not all so good that they get straight lines. Or the possibility that they actually did write it without leaving any gapping, and they folded the writing itself upon itself. That's another way to come about it. The other way that is described by the Yad Ramah and by others is the fact that they used to have strings at the top of the shtarot, and then they would fold over the shtarot. They wrote them in a normal fashion, and then after the fact, they folded them. Not like what we're describing now, the way that Rashi, the Rishbam, and the Balei Tosafot describe is that they wrote two lines, folded it over, and then stitched it up. Wrote two lines, and then folded it over and stitched it up. That means that they were folding it as they were writing it. On the other hand, the way that the Yad Ramah describes it, it seems like they wrote the whole shtar out, and then afterwards they're folding it over. When they folded it over, then they tied. They didn't roll it, but they folded it, and then they tied knots with the strings that were attached to the top of the document. They would tie knots on it, fold it again, and then tie knots. And they would do this three or so times, and then they would fold it over and tie the knots. So there the kesher is literally the knot that is made, or the tying that is made. That's the difference between the two opinions. And then over here, Ravun Amar ben Kesher the Kesher, what does it mean that they signed ben Kesher the Kesher? So for, the Gemara is going to second say Migavai on the inner side. So the, what is meant by the inner side, according to this, it would mean that when he says ben Kesher the Kesher is that they signed on the blank area between the lines. Meaning that you have two lines, a blank space, and then two lines. They signed in that blank area. The Balei Tosafot already raised an issue, which is, didn't the Mishnah say that that was the exact difference between a get pashut and a get kashur, was where the Edim signed. On a get pashut, they sign on the inside. On a get mikushar, they sign on the outside. So how can you tell me that they're signing on those blank spaces in between? That's on the same side as the writing. So the Baal Tosafot suggests over here that maybe ikal meimar the shapi kari achurav ben shita the shita. Between line and line, it's considered achurav because they're signing above the writing. They're not signing below the writing like normal, but rather above the writing. So that's the way that they explain it. So again, for their position, it's much harder to understand what that means if it's me'achurav, if you're signing on the inside. I'll be honest with you, a lot of this is not clear to me, but it seems like not all of the edim signed on each blank space. They had one aid signed on each of the blank spaces, so by which you have then three different edim. Each line is a separate aid, and in totality there are three edim that are signing along that blank spacing. It's not that each blank space they have the three edim signed, but rather in cumulatively, each blank has one aid in that blank space, and then they fold it over each time. So that's the way you would learn according to the Baal Tosafot. Again, the problem is that Machurav here takes on a different definition than we would have thought. For the Rad Ramah and those that follow the view that you tie it up, then Ben Kesher, the Kesher means between the knots. You tie a knot, then you sign it. Then you tie another knot, so it's between the Ksharim, and Migavai for them would mean underneath the knots. That they would sign, and then the knots were tied above the signature, and they were actually covering the signature what was there. The reason you need that is because upcoming in the Gemara, it's going to seem that the signatures were not visible. So why were they not visible? According to the Baal Tosafot, Rashi, the Rishvan, they're not visible because they're inside and they're folded up in that area. For the Yad Ramah, they're not visible because you tied the knot above the signatures and therefore they were not visible. So that's the view of Rav Huna. Rav Irmiya Ba'ava Amar, Achorei Aktav, Ukaneged Atav Mi Bachutz. So Rav Irmiya Ba'ava is much more straightforward, or we would have intuited from the Mishnah, which is that they sign on the other side of the shtar. They sign on the back side of the shtar. Now here he gives three qualifications, which is, that's be Achorei Aktav, Keneged Aktav, and Mi Bachutz. So Mi Bachutz is the easy part, it's on the other side, from where you wrote on the shtar. The two other pieces, the Baal Tosafot speak about exactly why you need the language in each one of these, but Ucheneged Aktav, exactly where it's written on the inside. So you sign only in the areas where there's writing, not where there are blank spaces, number one. And number two is not beyond where the shtar goes. That the signatures are going to become the delineating factors for how big the shtar was on the other side. In that way, you prevent forgeries or adding of information afterwards, because if there's information that goes beyond the signatures of the edim, you know that that's false or that was added in later. So the signatures will match up with the writing on the other side. And that's what the Baal Tosafot describe over here. Ilo amar el achorei aktav, keneged aktav, v'lo amar bibachutz. If you only wrote that it was behind the ktav and opposite the ktav, hamina keneged aktav, hainu klape aktav, that would be opposite ktav, achorei aktav, hainu lamala min aktav. Similar to the way that the Tosafot explains it for Rav Huna, he would say you sign on the same side as the document, but you just sign above. You sign at the top of the document to the width of the writing that's there, and you could fulfill that reason. So that's why it says bachutz, to tell you it's on the other side, the back side of the shtar. That's where you're going to sign. If you only had iavi amar achorei aktav mi bachutz, if you only wrote that, havamilo afilu ben kesher the kesher, then I thought you would even sign in the blank spaces that are there. That's why I need to know that it is keneged aktav, kamashalon keneged aktav, v'lo keneged akesher. V'i hava amino bi bachutz keneged aktav, v'yon yadad, hava amino litzadim, that you could do it on the sides. So all three of these definitions tell you exactly where it needs to be signed, which means on the other side of the shtar, in the area where there's writing, and it has to expand over the area that is the writing, not on the blank spaces, not on the sides, but literally over where the writing is, and that will delineate where the writing is on the other side. Amarle Rami Bar Chama Rav Chista LeRav Huna. So according to the first reasoning that it was Kesher than Kesher, Tamar Ben Kesher the Kesher Kasaka Datskin Ben Kesher the Kesher Migavai. This is what I was describing to you, that the Havamin of the Gemara is that it's on the inside. So again, for the Baal Tosafot and Rashi and the Rishbam, that literally means on the inside, in the blank space on the inside. For the Yad Ramah, it means that underneath the knot, that it's where you would sign. Vahu Mikushar the Ka'ata the Kamei the Rabbi. There was a get mikushar that appeared before Rabbi. V'amar Rabbi, ein zman bazeh. I don't see any dating on this shtar. So what comes out from this, so what seems to come out of this, is that Rabbi was not familiar with the get mikushar. So if you want to suggest that in the time of Baal Tosafot, based on what they asked before, the get mikushar was not being used already, here it seems that even in the time of Rabbi, it wasn't being used as prolifically or was not known as well. It could be for one of two reasons. The Baya Tosafot discussed this, that whether the institution was particular to an area of the Kohanim or particular to a specific region, and it didn't expand beyond that, so maybe Rabbi's outside of that region where they instituted it, or the possibility that it did fall out of practice. And Rabbi is looking at a document where he doesn't really understand or he doesn't know. Now, the Baya Tosafot tried to deal with that because we're going to see in a second that his son responds to him and tells him information. So if his son knew about it, how did he not know about it? Because the only way that his son learned was from Rabbi himself. It's a little strange, the whole story here, about the fact that he wasn't so familiar with it. What seems is that even if he was familiar with Get Mikushar, either there were different versions of it, Get Mikushar, or the major pieces of information he would have figured would have been in an area that was prominent and he'd be able to see. So that's why he runs into a problem, which is, Amar Rabbi Ein Zman Bazeh, there is no dating on it. Amalei Rabbi Shimon Birabi, Larabi, so his son Rabbi Shimon says to him, Shema ben Ksharav Muvla. Maybe it's captured in its folds, or embedded in the folds where you can't see it. Or according to the Rabbi Ramah, it's underneath the knots, and that's why you can't see it. Rabbi's trying to see the information without opening up the shtar, without moving the shtar. If you remember from yesterday's daf, that only the toref was put into a mikushar. The tofes, the boilerplate language of the shtar, was left open and not put into this ket mikushar. Seems that's even more interesting, which is that they only folded like the top half of it, but they left the bottom half just like a regular shtar, and it was sticking out. Because that's what we said before, that's pashut shibikesher. There's a part of the get mikushar that is left like a regular shtar, and that's the tofes, the boilerplate language. And so Rabbi was able to see seemingly something or part of the shtar. He couldn't see the ikar part of the shtar or the date or something that was important about the shtar. So then his son says to him, maybe it's captured between the ksharim. So again, for Rashi, Rishbam, Tosafot, that means in the folds. It's captured in the folds. And for the Rad Ramah, that means it's underneath the knots. Playa. So they flattened it out, opened it up. V'chazio. And sure enough, he saw it. Vimita, if you're right, like Rav Huna says that they also signed Ben Kesher the Kesher, Ein Zman Bazeh, Vein Edim Bazeh, Mibayle. He should have said, where's the date and where are the Edim? How could he see the Edim and not see the date based on Rav Huna's position? Now again, we're thinking that Rav Huna's position means Migavai on the inside, and that's why he won't be able to see it. The Edim are either folded on the inside or underneath the knots. So the same problem he has with the date, he's going to have with the Edim as well. And how come that's not mentioned? Amalei, Misavard ben Kesher the Kesher Migavai. What do you think, that they sign on the inside between the Ksharim? Lo, ben Kesher mi Kesher mi Avrai. They do it on the outside. So that's where you run into this problem, which is, we thought that you were signing in the blank spaces on the inside. That's not true. They sign on the blank spaces on the outside. So on the other side of the shtar, they sign in the blank spaces that are between the two. So when you fold it, the signatures will still be visible, even though the date won't be visible. But the signatures will be able to be seen because they're on the outside of the shtar. Or for the Yad Ramah, you don't sign underneath the knot. You don't sign and then tie the knot. You tie the knot and then sign. So the signature is outside of the knot and you will be visible. So that's the first of all. So now we've redefined Rav Huna. To say that Rav Huna meant on the outside of the shtar, not on the inside of the shtar. So that avoids the question with regards to the story with Rabbi. But then, v'nilchosh dilma zayif. V'kotav ma'idabai v'chatime sa'ade. Well, he can write whatever he wants now. The signature is already there. They're put on the other side. He can write whatever he pleases. Tichtive sharir v'kayam. This comes important because all of our shtarot today have this in it. Although it was clear in their day that was not the practice, they wrote these magic words at the end of the shtar, which was sharir v'kayam. It means that it is upheld and it is fulfilled, that it is a good shtar. The reason they put it in there is not because that it had any meaning, but rather that was an indication that that was the end of the shtar. Once you wrote sharir v'kayam, you knew that that was the end of the shtar. Nothing beyond that was meaningful. Like today, where they have the end of a document or a contract, and they say, this is intentionally left blank. Or anything beyond this, right, is not part of the core shtar. They give some indication that the shtar ended at this point in time. That this is the last line of the shtar. So this sharir v'kayam was done in order to do that. Now, the Baalei Tosafot point out that it must be that this was only true, first of all, in a get mikushar, that they wrote this. In Get Pashut, they didn't need to do this because the Edim signed at the bottom of the shtar. So you knew where the shtar ended because you have a document that ends, and then you sign underneath the document. So whenever the signatures are, that's the end of the document. You don't have to worry about information being added in. So then in Get Pashut, it's not necessary. The place where it was necessary is in a Get Mikushar, and we're going to see now it was only according to Rav Huna. According to Rav Huna's opinion, you would need to have this Sharir B'Kayam to prevent against forgeries. For Rav Yirmiyahu Ba'abo's position, we'll see in a second, you don't need that because of the way that they were signed, prevented this problem even without Sharir V'Kayam. Today, we put in Sharir V'Kayam in all documents. When they read the Ketubah at the wedding, you might hear that right before they see the Edim, they write, call Sharir V'Kayam. That is an indication that it's the end of the document. So it became incorporated into all contracts or documents that they end with Sharir V'Kayam to indicate that's the end and nothing can be added beyond that point. So Gemara says, "V'nichosh dama katav madubai, v'adar katav shirir v'kayam achrina." All you do is add in more wording, and then it writes shirir v'kayam again. So that the Gemara answers, "Izleichat shirir v'kayam katvina, drei shirir v'kayam lo katvina." You would defeat the whole purpose if you could write shirir v'kayam more than once. There's only one time that it's written shirir v'kayam. If it's twice, you already know that he added something into the shtar because the first shirir v'kayam was the end of the shtar. "V'leichosh dama machik le shirir v'kayam." So he'll erase the first Sharir V'Kayam. He'll write whatever he wants. Katam Adabayim, other Katam Sharir V'Kayam. And then he'll write another Sharir V'Kayam at the end. Now there'll only be one. Because he erased the first one, added in any documentation, then put Sharir V'Kayam at the end. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tluya Mikuyemet Kshera, Machak Pasul, Afo Pishi Mikuyam. Even if it is Mikuyam, Velo Amru Machak Pasul, Ala Makom Sharir V'Kayam, Ukashiur Sharir V'Kayam. So here you have a number of halachot that are placed by Rabbi Yochanan, but Rabbi Yochanan's halachot relates specifically to what we're asking over here. Rabbi Yochanan says, we have a problem. Sometimes you need to change a shtar. Sometimes you need to make edits in a shtar. So, you know, not like today where you could just reprint the whole shtar and sign it. You make edits on the shtar. Today we deal with that problem. For instance, if there are edits made on the shtar, you make the person initial the edits on the shtar. So that way you know it wasn't just simply that it was added afterwards or this word was inserted afterwards. Everybody puts a little initial to show that that's the case. So you have the same problem in their time, which is they have a shtar, and the sofer left out some words. So he wants to put in a little caret and add the words in between the lines. The problem is, we don't know if that was done beforehand, or if that was done after the fact. So that's what the Rabbi Yochanan says here, tluya. Tluya means like when you put in a caret and you have words hanging between the lines. They must be mikuyemet. They have to be verified in the document itself. Which means that either on the line itself where it's found, or at the end of the document, it has to write that those words that are hanging at line 2 or line 3, those were as part of the document when it was signed. So therefore there's information that indicates that the insertions are part and parcel of the document and were not added later. So that's what he's saying. If it's mikuyemet, if there is writing in the shtar that indicates that the shtar acknowledges these insertions, then it's fine. If not, Sula, you can't use the document, or the truth is that in later in today's daf, it's not clear whether the document would be pasul, or they just the insertions would be ignored. Because with certain items, we would say that if you do it, then it ruins the whole document, it makes the document pasul, we'll see in a second. But here, it might be that simply we ignore the extra writing that's there because you didn't have it verified. So that might be the difference between what we say here, which is Tuluya Mikuyemet, which is what we're going to say about Rabbi Yochanan's statement later today about exactly what you can or cannot do. But in this scenario, if you have these additions, you have to verify or has to be acknowledged in the shtar that on line 3 there was an insertion, there was an extra word, or at the end of that line it writes it and tells you that. Now, machak, if there's an erasure in the document, pasul. By definition, that is pasul. Afal pishe mikuyam. Even if the document acknowledges the erasure, it is no good. Now that's very difficult, because what happens if you made a mistake early in the document? You wanted to erase and you wrote over it. Why shouldn't that be a good document? You're afraid that he came afterwards, erased it, and changed the number, changed something in the document. But if it's mikuyam, if the shtar acknowledges that there was an erasure and there was a change up there, that should be okay. Truth is that that's not even so okay, because even if they acknowledge an erasure, they need to acknowledge exactly what was changed, because otherwise the person can erase it again and then write whatever they want. But they're very focused on this. V'lo amru machak pasul. Erasure is only problematic at the end of the document. That's in a place where it could have been Sharir V'Kayam that was erased. And the erasure is the size of the words Sharir V'Kayam. So anywhere towards the end of the document, if we find an erasure that is the size of Sharir Rekayama. Obviously, if it's more than that, the document is pasul. Because then we already know what's happening here, which is that they erased the Sharir Rekayam, they extended the document, and then wrote Sharir Rekayam again. So then even if it's Mikuyam, all they're doing is being Mikayim, exactly what they did now, which is the forgery. You had a document that ended Sharir Rekayam, they come along, they erase the Sharir Rekayam, write three more lines in the document, and then they write Sharir Rekayam. Oh, and that erasure? Yeah, that's part of the document. We acknowledge there was an erasure in the document. He did all of that after the fact. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan says, that if there's an erasure towards the end of the document, where you could have thought the word Sharir Rekayam would appear, that is a pasul document. So that solves our problem over here. You were asking, can't they add on to the document? According to Rav Huna, where the signatures are on the back of the document, or they're next to the knots on the document, don't we have a problem, which is that you can extend the document after the fact? Gemara says, no, you have Sharir Rekayam there. So Sharir Rekayam will solve our problem. Gemara says, okay, he'll just add on more and say Sharir Rekayam again. Gemara says, you only accept one Sharir Rekayam, not two Sharir Rekayams. So now the last possibility is that he erases Sharir Rekayam, extends the document, and writes it again. That's Rabbi Yochanan's din over here, that if you have an erasure at that point in the document that could have been an erasure of Sharir Rekayam, the document is pasul. There's no way we're going to accept such a document. It is a very suspect. It's very problematic that there's an erasure at that point in the document, which is indicative of somebody playing around the document or likely playing around the document, and you can't use such a document, even if the document itself acknowledges it. Because that could be exactly what the forgery does. It erases Sharir Rekayam, writes more, and then acknowledges that they erased before. But that's all part of that forgery, and therefore we won't accept it. Okay, that is as far as Rav Huna's position. Rav Yehuda Rav Abba. So now we move to Rav Yehuda Rav Abba, and this is where both the Bali Tosafot and the Rishbam acknowledge and say that V'lo tzarich Sharir Rekayam. It's clear in Rav Yehuda Rav Abba's position that they didn't write Sharir Rekayam, because if they did, then none of this would be questionable, or all the questions we ask would be moot, because they write Sharir Rekayam and it would be done. Damar achorei aktav ukeneged aktav mibachutz. His opinion is that you sign on the back of the shtar. Lechosh dilma ktiv migavai maidaboi umachtim sade yeterei meavrai. What is he going to do? He's going to extend the document on the inside and then add on additional edim on the other side of the document. Over here, the Rashbam quotes Rabbeinu Chananel Epshat, which is very difficult, and for that reason, the Rashbam himself rejects it, but most of the Rishonim also reject this view of the Rabbeinu Chananel, because it doesn't seem logical. What he ended up doing is having three edim signed on the back, and then the document on the other side extends beyond their signatures. It goes further down the daf. So they asked him, how come it is that the Or document went further than the signatures of the edim? He said, I thought more edim were going to come and sign afterwards. I left them space to sign afterwards, and therefore there's a disconnect between the length of the shtar and the edim on the other side. I thought I would get two more edim to sign, so the shtar went further down. And that's why it's blank on the other side. So the Rishvam and others say, why would anybody ever believe such a thing? That seems so ridiculous that that would be the reason that he's saying. But rather, what they suggest is, and it's the gears that we have in our Gemara, Vana Amar Ana the Rabot Beidim Hudavde. I wanted to have more edim. That's based on the fact that a get mikushar needs a minimum of three edim, but has no maximum. It can have as many edim as you want, based on the number of folds that you have in the document. You can add in or have as many edim as you want. Because of that din, that you're allowed to add in as many edim as you want, what he's going to do is simply, he has three edim signed, and it's a document that ends where those three edim have signed until on the other side of the paper. So then he goes and he adds on to the shtar. And he brings in two more edim, and they just sign below. So all he does is he can match up the extension of the document. He can just add on edim on the other side. I have five edim now. That's fine. Nobody is going to question the fact that he has five instead of three. That's allowed by a get mikushar. He said, well, we had a very long document. I needed more edim to sign on it, so I got five signatures on the back. And in that way, you could extend the document after the fact. So that's the fear here by Rabbi Yehuda Rav Abba. The Bali Tosafot do ask over here, and the Bali Tosafot have been asking this from the beginning of the Perek until now. They speak about different ways to prevent against forgeries and problems. They use two solutions. One is called gaiz, cutting off, which is that you eliminate the extra paper, extra part of the document, so then you can't add anything on. Or they have what's called tiyuta, which is that they scribble on it, either they mark it with lines across, they scratch it across, or they put ink or black ink on it so that there's no way you can write on it. So the Baal Tosafot have been asking every stage of the way, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? You can prevent all these problems by simply doing that. So here's one of those cases, which is, why don't you just cut off the bottom of the document? If you have blank space at the end of the document, the signature is three signatures, end here, the document ends here, just cut off the bottom. Then nobody can extend it. What do we have to worry about all these problems? So the answer that they give, and the Ramban focuses on a lot, is that the space at the bottom is needed for the henpek. It's needed for Beit Din to validate the document. When Beit Din comes in to validate the document, they need somewhere to write the validation. Or if you have a shover, if you have a receipt for the collection over here, you need somewhere on the document to have that receipt written. So you need to leave blank space there that is usable space, otherwise you'll have nowhere to validate the document at Beit Din, or you have nowhere to write a receipt for the cancellation of the document. For that reason, they leave the blank space, even though that might lead to this problem. So now they're trying to deal with it. Okay, if that's the case, how do we deal with this problem? Amalei, so Rav Chisda says, back to Rami Bar Chama, Misavart Eidim Kisidram Chatimei, you thought that the Eidim are signed in order, Eidim Mimata Lamala Chatimei. They are signed perpendicular to the writing of the Shtar. If you have the Eidim sign in the same direction, parallel to the Ktav on the other side, then you run into this problem where you can extend the document and just have more signatories to the document and you can keep extending it. Over here, if they sign perpendicular to the writing on the other side, you can't have that. So for instance, you can see here, he says, Mimato Lamala, from the bottom to the top, which is that if you have a document that ends at a particular location, on the other side, the Eidim will begin to sign at the bottom of the document, signing towards the top of the document, perpendicular to the Ktav on the other side. They will sign from the bottom up. But where their signature starts, that is the end of the document. If he extends afterwards, it'll be clear that he's beyond the beginning of those signatures. If he adds signatures, they'd be in line with the other signatures perpendicular to the Ktav. So adding on a signature in the same direction as the Ktav would make it obvious that he added that after the fact. And in that way, you prevent the problem of extending the Shtar. First of all, according to the Yad Ramah, it's easy to understand what happened here because he says that they wrote the whole thing first and then folded it up and knotted it. So according to them, it would be easy. According to the Rashi, the Baal Tosafot, the Rashbam, then you would have at each fold, then you would have them write from the part of the Ktav, perpendicular to the Ktav, starting the heading of the Ktav, and then you would cut each one. And then the three Eidim would sign each one on the fold perpendicular. So then you would get to the last fold, and that would be the perpendicular signature, and that would be the end of the document, or at the end. So now, both the signature has to start at the bottom of the document, and has to end at the top of the document. Oh. And that way, you have a clearance that you know where the document ended and where it started, so nobody can play around with it, because it's connected at top now. It's exactly connected at top, but it also limits the extent of the top by the width of the signatures, which are going to cover the ground between the end of the document and the beginning of the document. How they fit it into the Ksharim, either they signed on each Kesher, your suggestion that they signed at the bottom of the Tofes, or the possibility that they signed and then folded afterwards, which is also a possibility. But that's maybe they did according to Rashi and the Tosfot as well, which is that they signed the whole back, and then they left those blank spaces, but their signatures went from top, bottom to top, and then they folded it afterwards. It could be that they did it that way also. Though it's much more difficult, according to Rashi and the Baal Tosafot, who seem to think that they folded each time, versus the Yad Ramah, who thinks that they're knotting it and then signing, which would make it easier to deal with, because then the whole document's written first. The Ramban brings that the Rimi Gash and others suggest that the writing over here is not perpendicular to the document, but rather you turn the document upside down, and then on the other side, the opposite side of the writing, you start the signatures. So the signatures are in parallel to the document, but they are upside down, which is that the first signature starts at the bottom of the document because you've now turned the document over and flipped the top to the bottom. So as you sign what's on the top of the back of the document, that's really the bottom of the other side. And in doing so, you go down, then you can delineate where the document started and ended, because the first eight is signed at the bottom of the document. On that, the Ramban himself asks, why can't you just add Eidim on top? The guy could add on more writing to the bottom of the document, flip it over, and then have an eight signed on top of that, and it would be fine. So he says that wouldn't work, or that doesn't happen, because Eidim don't sign before other Eidim. Their Eidim sign on a document, you always sign under the Eidim that exists, not above the Eidim that exists. Therefore, if someone did that already, would it be indicative of a problem? Even though, again, if someone's trying to cheat or create a forgery, then they might get a deem that are willing to do that, or an aid that's willing to do that on his behalf. But at least there, they would be known that they were doing something wrong or that they were signing in the wrong place, and therefore, it would prevent these types of forgeries in general. The Baalei Tosafot ask over here, why don't we just have a simple solution, which is have the edim sign on the inside of the get mikushar, rather than on the outside of the get mikushar. So Tosafot in the end says, V'yesh lomar, t'chol ma sheyuchlu lishanot mipashut ayu mishanim. As much as they could differentiate the get mikushar from the get pashut, they did. Kishlo yu kol b'kiim nasoto. In order to make it that it would not be that people were readily available to write these types of shtarot, and that would cause the Kohen to be placated or to be assuaged from his anger and then not give the get. So they wanted to make it as difficult as possible, both from the perspective of actually making the document, as well as to the rarity of individuals who could actually do a get, mikushar. So if they allowed you to sign on the inside, that would have made it easier. If they wanted to make it more difficult, they have you sign on the outside. Well, then that presents the other problems which we're trying to deal with now in terms of forgeries. But the reason they didn't go the simpler route is because of the fact that they are trying to make it difficult and they are trying to make it more rare that they have such documents. And then in that way, it would take longer to produce such a document. And that's the whole purpose of this takana, which is to slow down the giving of the get. So when it says, V'lichosh dilma mitrami ri'utei b'shita achrona. Maybe there was something negative in the last line, which means that there was some sort of condition, some sort of information that was in the last line that the person holding the shtar wasn't so happy with. Maybe it curtailed his rights somehow. So what is he going to do? He's going to cut off the last line of the document. Oh, no problem. We just said that the signatures of the edim begin from the last line. He does that, he's going to cut off his signature. He won't have his signature. The guy is lay the shita achrona, the guy is lay the Reuven bahadei. And then he cuts off Reuven with it. Umitkasher beben Yaakov eid. Because what it says is Reuven ben Yaakov eid. So we're quoting a Mishnah now. We're going to quote the number of Mishnayot from the Gemara and Gittin, which tell us that when you sign on a document, you can sign Reuven eid, you can sign ben Yaakov eid, or you can sign Reuven ben Yaakov eid. So now, say the person signed Reuven ben Yaakov eid, and the bottom of the document is not to his pleasing. So what does he do? He slices off the bottom with the word Reuven, and now he has Ben Yaakov Eid. Ben Yaakov Eid is a fine signature on the document, so he can determine where the document starts, or really ends, by slicing off not only the part that he doesn't like, but the aid or the piece of the aid's name. Now, obviously it only works if it's aligned that way. It gets it lined perfectly, but that will happen. That's what they're afraid of, that these types of things will happen. It's not, because you have a Mishnah, Ben Ish Ploni Eid Kasher, that's a fine signature, and that's considered to be a good Eidut on the document. So, Dichtiv, Reuven Ben Bechadaro, Yaakov Ad Eid Ilave. So that you wrote Reuven Ben on one line, and then above that you wrote V'Yaakov Eid. So the way that the Baalei Tosafot seem to describe it in their Brain of Gershom says is that the case here is wrote Kagon Reuven, he wrote Reuven Bechadaro, V'Tachad Reuven Katav Ben, underneath the word Reuven he wrote the word Ben, and then V'Katav Yaakov Eid Samuch Reuven, and then he wrote Yaakov Eid parallel to Reuven. So in essence the Ben is sitting below the Reuven, and then you have the Yaakov Eid beyond that, further along in the document. So it really reads like Reuven Yaakov Eid, and the word Ben is right below the word Reuven. So that way if you slice off Reuven, you're also going to slice off the Ben, and all you're going to be left with is the Yaakov over here. Although the Riva points out, if you put the word Ben above or below, that the word Ben has to be as long as the word Reuven, because otherwise what you could do is slice off the Re'u of Reuven, as well as the Ben that's below it, and then you'll be left with Ben Yaakov Eid from the end of the word Reuven. And so therefore he says that the word Ben underneath must be as long or reach the end of Reuven, otherwise you'd run into the same problem where you could create, by slicing off the bottom, Ben Yaakov Eid. Or the other possibility is that you wrote the Ben under the Ben of Reuven. That way if you sliced off the Re'u of Reuven, you'd be left with Ben, but there'd be another Ben below it, would indicate that something's gone awry over here, because otherwise why would you have the word Ben repeated twice? Gemara says, "V'leichosh dilma gaizle the Reuven ben." Let's say that he cuts off the Reuven ben over here. Umit kasher be Yaakov eid, and then he'll be left with just Yaakov eid there, which would be okay. It's not ish ploni eid If you have a single name, Eid Kasher. Zalo Ktiv Eid. He didn't write the word Eid over there. Either you have to say that he wrote Uvein Ben Yaakov without the word Eid. Vibay Tema, and some others suggest, Tema Olam Ktiv Eid. He did write Eid. He wrote Ruvain Ben and then Yaakov Eid. But we know for certain that Yaakov's signature doesn't look like this. The way that the Rashbam reads it is, and this whole state, in this whole region, we don't know any Yaakovs that write like this. That's a pretty high standard to figure out or know that there's no Yaakovs that write. Now, it's true that not everybody was literate in their day. Not everybody wrote. It was rarer that people knew how to write or to sign. But nevertheless, to come up with a possibility of determining that this signature, there's no such Yaakov that has a signature like that, is a pretty high standard, pretty difficult thing to do. So now, the Gemara's solution is to say either that we leave out the word aid to prevent against these types of forgeries, or we know that people don't have this name and sign like that. And Tosfo points out here that you actually end up now with an ironic situation in which, if you write what normally would be the way to sign a document is, Ruvein ben Yaakov Eid, that'll be Pasul. On the other hand, if you write Ben Ish Ploni Eid, Ben Yaakov Eid, or you write Ruvein Eid, that'd be Kasher. Based on this, to prevent the forgeries of the document, it'll actually turn out that we will be Posel, what would be the most normal or natural way to sign, which is Ruvein Ben Yaakov Eid, because you have to leave out the word Eid. If you have the word in Eid, it's problematic. But if you signed originally Ben Yaakov Eid, or you signed Ruvein Eid, then it would be fine with that, because then there's no problems or fear of forgery in those cases. So now the Gemara says, V'dilma v'shmei de'avu achatam. Maybe you're right. There is no Yaakov with that handwriting here. But rather, it's the son signing with his father's name. As a kavod to his father, he signs his name, but then when he signs his name, he signs his father's name. So in essence, the same thing that we have today with surnames, which is that the family name, or there's a patriarch of the family, that everybody signs or uses that description to be their signature. So yes, his name is Ruvein ben Yaakov, but nevertheless, when he signs documents, he signs in his name of his father Yaakov to give honor to his father. So if he does that, then it's possible that the handwriting, you're right, doesn't match Yaakov's handwriting, but it's Ruvein himself that's signing with the name Yaakov on it. It's one thing to give kavod to your father. It's another thing to not use your own name and use your father's name. That's not acceptable, or that's not considered to be normal behavior, where you would forego writing your own name and sign with your father's name. Maybe he's using a siman, which means that in their day, they used to have a chotem, they used to have signets that actually imprinted a sign into the document. So now, they also signed in that manner. Maybe if you're not using a signet to press the form in there, they might sign by doing some sort of drawing or picture, which was the, we'll call it, the banner of that family. And we have evidence of that. We saw this in the Gemara in Gittin, which is, Daha Rav Tzier Kavro. Rav used to draw a picture of a fish. B'chenina Tzier Charuta. B'chenina used to draw palm branches. Rav Chista used to draw a samech. Rav Hoshaya used to draw an ayin. So for Rav Chista and Rav Hoshaya, it's because that's in their name, the samech of Rav Chista and the ayin of Rav Hoshaya. Rav Bar Ravuna Makuta, he used to draw a picture of a mast. You can see that in the Rashbam, then he brings the old French down. He says it's a masta. He drew a toren or a mast. That was the picture that he drew. The Rashbam says over here, someone who explains the reasoning why they did this is only mistaken. Says, I don't really know what the reason is here, but let me at least speculate that maybe one of them liked to eat fish and one of them liked to eat dates. But it's just some sort of signature, it's just some sort of crest or picture that they use to represent themselves. So unlike the samech and the ayin of Rav Chista and Rav Hoshaya, where it represents their name, the Rashbam says that Kavro and Charuta don't in any way represent the names of Rav and Rabbi Chanina, but rather must have indicated some sort of character trait or characteristic of theirs, or practice of theirs, and that's why they use the fish or the palm tree, But otherwise, we don't really know why they would have used these to represent their names, why that these in particular would represent the name of Rav or Rabbi Chanina. So even though these were well-known, and the Gemara over there says that they had become well-known because they used to sign decrees or takanot or something had a Beit Din, so people knew these were their signatures, you have to say something along those lines here. That it was common that people used their family name or the father's name to sign with, or it was something that was already known about this family or this individual that he signed in such a manner. Otherwise, it would not be considered acceptable just to all of a sudden to say that this is the family sign or signature. So here you have indications that people use some sort of representative signature or sign, not their actual signature. The Gemara's suggestion is that here he's signing with Yaakov, not because it's his father's name, but because that is the insignia of the family is Yaakov. Or that is the way that they're going to sign. He's using his father's name as this representative signature. And the Gemara there speaks about the fact that these work when everybody knows or it's well known that this is the way that these individuals sign and this is their siman, for the equivalent of a family crest. That's known or well known out there. Problem here is obviously that this guy is not as well known as these Amoraim, and so that it's not known that he would do this. But the Gemara says, L'chatziv inish l'shavi l'shmei d'avo asimana. Nobody makes their father's name the family crest. That's just not an acceptable way or way to sign your name. You're not going to make your father's name your signature or your picture or crest that you're going to put on there. And therefore, we won't worry about that situation or scenario because it won't come about. Mazutra amar, lama lecha kulehai. Why are you guys going through all this trouble? Kol mikushar, shein adav kalim b'shita achat pasul. Any get mikushar in which the edim don't all end on the same line, pasul, it is problematic. I mean that you have to align the edim in such a way that they will be exactly aligned. If you come after the fact and try to add in an aid afterwards, it'll be very hard to align that aid with the other edim that have already signed on the document. So that's what the Marsutra says. You've seen this, Rishbam. Kohanish nuye dechike le Rabbi Yirmiyah Abba. You guys went through all these somersaults, these acrobatics to figure out what's going on with Rabbi Yirmiyah Abba. From the beginning to the end. Ben milamala mata, ben milamata lamala. That's, you have it, whether it's perpendicular to the document, whether it starts at the top to the bottom or bottom to the top. They don't all end on one line. Pasul. They don't all end at the same place. Pasul. They have to sign exactly equal, one below the next. And end at the same point. Whether they all start at the bottom line and go towards the top, that's Mimata Lamalo. Ben Matrilim Lachtom Keneged Shita Rishona. Or they start from the first line. Umisayim Bishita Achrona. You can't add in on the bottom. Their signatures don't reach that extra place. And you also can't slice off the bottom because you have three signatures lined up. So the problem of what we thought before is he would slice off the bottom of one signature and then the other two signatures would be fine because they were signed higher up. What he says is no. When they sign, the three edim sign, they sign from top to bottom or bottom to top, and they have to fill in the same amount of space. That means that if you have Reuven ben Yaakov, and then you have Levi ben Yaakov, even though Levi's name is smaller, his name, the lamed of Levi will have to begin at the last line, and the bet of Yaakov will have to be at the top line. And same thing Reuven ben Yaakov, his reish will have to start at the bottom, and his bet will have to end at the top. Now you go to slice it off, you might be able to get Levi off, but then Reuven's going to be cut in half. If you slice Reuven off, you're going to enter into Levi Ben. Like, you're going to end up with not being able to do it in a way that leaves all three of the Edim intact. By doing that, making sure that all three Edim are aligned perfectly, then you eliminate all of these problems. Because you can't add in something at the bottom, because we know where the Edim either start or end. Their signature is perpendicular to the document. In addition, you can't cut it off, because there's no way that you could cut it off in such a manner that you get all three signatures to read what you want afterwards. All to read Ben Yaakov, or Ben this, or Ben that, and slice off all their first names. It has to be that all their first names are exactly identical in size, and in the script that they're using to the point where you could slice it, which is very unlikely, given that you have three signatures over here. So the view of the Rashbam here in terms of Marzutra is that we're maintaining the idea that it's perpendicular. It's just that all the signatories run the bottom to the top, and therefore if you sliced it off, you would have all three of them in a row and wouldn't work. The Baalei Tosafot bring two other alternatives with regards to Marzutra. One of them is the fact that we drop this perpendicular idea, and rather we are going to sign parallel to the document. In the Perish Riva, the Olam Kisidram Chatime, they're signing in a normal manner, but the way that they do it is that all three Edim sign parallel to the last line, which is that in a row, all three Edim across have to sign and fit their entire names into that last row. So on the opposite side of the paper, opposite and parallel to the last line of the document, all three Edim, Reuven ben Yaakov, Levi ben Shimon, Mordechai ben Chofni, three Edim would sign all the way across in one row across the bottom, and that would be the way you prevent the problem, because then if you slice the bottom off, you're slicing all three Edim off, and there's nothing left there for him to verify the document with, so then he can't slice it off, and that would prevent the issue of forgeries, as well as the fact that he can't extend the document, because all three of these signatories are in a row. And you can't add in any more because they didn't leave any room for anyone else. They go from one end of the document to the other end of the document parallel to the document from the right side to the left side. That'd be enough to show you where the document ended. And if you add it on afterwards, you can't add a deem because they fill out that space. Then Tosafot brings another possibility in which he says maybe we do uphold this perpendicular idea. But the way that Marzutra is explaining it over here now is that you write every word on a new line, which is that Reuven is the first line as perpendicular. The Reish of Reuven starts at the last line of the document, perpendicular going up. Then you have Reuven, then Ben is the next line, then Yaakov, and then Eid. So you do it all the way down so that if you slice the bottom, you won't be left with anything standing alone. Because each line that you write perpendicular to the document will have a new word on it. And therefore, if you slice the bottom, you will, by definition, slice off the Edim, because there's nothing left that is standalone, because each line is a new word. So that's another way that the Baalei Tosafot describe what Marzutra's Chiddush is over here. The second answer to the Baalei Tosafot, he agrees that it's perpendicular like the Rishbam, but he doesn't say like the Rishbam that they're all from bottom to top, one below the other, but simply that each signatory has his signature run word for word down that row, so that there's no two words on any given line, there's only one word on each line, perpendicular to the last line of the document. Or he brings that the Riva suggests that now Marzutra's given up this idea of perpendicular, and rather it's running parallel to the document, but all the Edim have to sign along one straight line that is parallel to the last line of the document on the other side. The Rashbam then continues and says, in the Perush Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, despite the fact that Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba answers all the questions on his position, and that it seems like he has the more logical of the two ways to sign, he says, nevertheless, the halacha is like Rav Huna, that the way that you sign is on the way that Rav Huna says, which has been kesher, the kesher, between the either the folds, according to them, or between the knots, according to the other opinion. The way that we read the Gemara, I would have favored heavily saying that the halacha is like Rimei Abba. He has a better solution, and the Gemara came up with the way that it is untouchable or unforgeable at this time, which is that you can sign in a way perpendicular to the document with three Edim all lined up like that. You're not going to have any issue whatsoever. Nevertheless, he says, our Mishnah sounds like Rav Huna. Why? Because of that statement in the Mishnah that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says you can change a mikushar into a get pashut. If a get pashut has the signatories on the inside, then it would be like a pashut. How is that? Aliba to Rabbi Irmiya, if according to Rabbi Irmiya that you've signed on a perpendicular manner, there's no way that a get mikushar, even if you sign on the inside, could ever look like a get pashut. They're always signing opposite or perpendicular to the ktav. So now you sign on the inside instead of the outside? That doesn't change the fact that it's not a get pashut. A get pashut has the signatories at the bottom of the document parallel to the writing of the document. According to Rav Huna, that could work out, because Rav Huna has the signatories running the same direction as the ktav, just on the back of the document. You do it on the inside of the document, you can come up with a get pashut. That is possible. Whereas for Rabbi Yirmiya, there's no possibility of creating such a document. He says, now, v'i kashalach, i'och, afilu Rav Huna, afilu pasut, shekadu ve'idov mi'acharav, yei kasher. then according to you, that means that according to Rav Huna, you could have a get pashut where they sign on the back. So if you have a get pashut where they sign on the back, you could create a get mikushar. So why is it that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel in the Mishnah only says that if you sign on the inside, it'll look like a get pashut? Why does he say if you sign on the outside, it'll look like a get mikushar? He says, Lokasha. Hadatan pashut edav shtaim. Yim tasua mikushar, mikushar bishne edim pasulhu. If you have two edim sign on it, it won't work. Avala mikushar sheedav shlosha, yish edim betocho, afilo alef kasher. You want to add on more edim and a get pashut, we have no problem with that. You can have as many edim as you want signed on the document. So that's why it won't work when you flip it the other way and make it into a get mikushar. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Kol mechakim kulan tzarich shiftov v'dein kiyumehon. So now this statement of Rabbi Yochanan seemingly matches up to what we saw from Rabbi Yochanan before, which is that anytime you have an erasure in the document, you have to write v'dein kiyumehon. This is evidence of the fact, or this verifies or validates the fact that there was an erasure in the document. You have to have that language added in. There, you can see here that the Rashbam over here says v'lo garas v'dein. That you don't need the word dein there. That is the Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rif, they take out the word dein. You can see that in the Bali Tosfot as well. He quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel, the lo garis. And he says, even though our Gemaras have the word v'dein in them, he says that's shufra de shtara. It's a nice thing. It's a enhancement of the shtar, but it's not absolutely necessary language to have in the shtar. So the Rashbam already clarifies that this is not going against what Rabbi Yochanan said before. Rabbi Yochanan said before, you can't erase at the end of the document. Because if you erase at the end of the document, even if you say that you validate it, it doesn't work. Because we're afraid that the validation is just validating the erasure that was done to forge the document. That has to be done before Sharir V'Kayam. And that's it. So over here, what you see is that according to Rabbi Yochanan, you have to then, at the end of the document, validate or verify any erasures that were done beforehand. And obviously from this statement of Rabbi Yochanan, the information of what he's stating here is equally applicable to a get mikushar and a get pashut. There's no reason to differentiate over here. In either one of these cases, you would need to validate an erasure that is done in the middle of the document. Now the question is, what happened to the other statement of Rabbi Yochanan? Before Rabbi Yochanan gave us two things. One is the tfuya. Insertions in the document also have to be verified at the end of the document, and erasures don't work when they're at the end of the document or the sharir v'kayam. So now we have another statement which says you can't have erasures higher up in the document, and you have to verify them. What happened to the tfuyot? Why doesn't he mention also those carrots? Or in insertions, you also have to be mikayim. So some say that if there's no big deal. This is just the memra here. It's not to the exclusion of the other memra. There are other Rishonim who say that this statement is to the exclusion of the other statement of Rabbi Yochanan, or, this is what I noted you from before, is that there's a difference. If you have an erasure in the document, it's not validated later on, the entire document is invalid. Because the erasure could have taken out something significant in the document, or changed something that was significant, and it ruins the whole document. On the other hand, when you put a carrot in and you add words, and then you come along and say there's no validation of it later, all you have to say is that the words that were added are not relevant. The rest of the document remains valid. Because you just didn't verify the insertion. The insertion was done afterwards. We can ignore it and you keep the document intact. And that might be the difference over here with the difference in the din of machakim, tzarich shiftov den ki yomeon. That is because without that, a machak will make the document invalid completely. The carrot, you want to have it be verified or validated and included in the document, that's fine. If you don't do that, it won't ruin the document. Just ignore that insertion and you read the document without the insertion. That may be why over here we only get a portion of Rabbi Yochanan's position. We have the next line of Rabbi Yochanan, which we will do tomorrow, which is Tzarich Shiachzor Minyano Shel Shtar B'Shita Achrona. You have to do a repetition at the end of the shtar of that which was written earlier in the shtar. So there's a recap of the shtar at the end of the line there, and the Gemara is going to ask my time up. Why do you want to have this repeated? Why do you want all the information repeated at the end of the document? And that we'll go into in tomorrow's daf as to why you do that. This is also additional evidence of the fact that they weren't using Sharir V'Kayam. Because the fact that they're doing this in order to show, we're going to see tomorrow, that this was the end of the document, it's clear here that they weren't using Sharir V'Kayam. Only Rav Huna, who made that suggestion, has it, unlike what we do today, where we have Sharir V'Kayam in all documents that indicate the end of the document. Okay, so we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Kuf Samach Aleph Amud Bet.